Okay, we're
you're getting a new perspective on this kind of thing.
We're holding in Perikov Gimel here of the Netzach Israel. If you remember, last time we focused the Perikov Beis, what the Maral tried to emphasize was how lacking the Beis HaMikdash, that situation of Churban, is really a situation of upheaval and dramatic change and dramatic loss for the world. And we analyzed the beauty, we saw the Maral beautifully in the Gemara, in the beginning of Brachas, Tach Gimel, where the Gemara speaks about when Rav Yossi entered one of the Churvois, of Churvois Yerushalayim, and he heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu moaning and crying over the Churban. And we saw about how he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does that every morning, every afternoon, every evening. Eliyahu HaNavi told him. So you understand that it's a constant issue before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The absence of the Churban, the Bonim Shegalu Me'al Shulchan Aviyem, the children that had to leave their father's table, this is a constant sore point, an open wound that's always there before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he cries over it constantly. And so we recognize that what we've talked about, what we speak about in this matter, is dramatic. It's not a little detail which is missing. It's a very, very big deal. What he's going to speak about here today in this section, in Perek Chav Gimel, is really just to bring this matter home. And while there are some, you know, twists and turns here in Perek Chav Gimel where the Maral will elaborate and add richness to discussions b'divrei Chazal, but I would say that in this perek, his main focus is not so much, what we're going to draw out of it is not so much to some gripping revelatory interpretation of a Chazal with a great elaborate intricacy, but it's going to be the one major thrust which he has, which he has taught us before. We'll remind you a little bit of one place where he taught it to us before, which is very, very fundamental, the way the Maral sees it, to the whole possibility of reversing the Churban. Not the possibility, but the process, rather, of reversing the Churban. And he says as follows, beginning this parak, and this is the thrust of it. And again, we'll go through some of the sources which he discusses, but this is the thrust of this parak. Hisbar lucha ki churban beis hamikdash hu chisaron ha'olam l'tachtonim v'lo elyonim. It's been made clear that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is really a chisaron. It's really something missing in the world for those below and for those above, for people and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, to the extent of his relationship with the world. V'lokach. So a person has to behave in this matter as it is, to be grieving over this thing. When a person mourns over Yerushalayim, and through that it is going to be visible that there is something lacking in the world, that's what will bring it back to its proper order. If you walk into a house and the house is topsy-turvy, it's messy, upside down, right? But you walk into the house and you have a sense of order, of cleanliness. So you know that somehow or another, before long, if you're going to stay in that house, it's going to have to get right, because it's driving you crazy. I mean, you can't handle it. So therefore, it'll return to the Seder. But if you're a teenager who somehow is missing that gene, or it's dormant for a period of 8 years, right? You know, and they come into the house, and to them, messy is fine. That's exact. I know where everything is, right? You know, famous last words, right? No, so to them, it's bechlal not an issue. They could be in the house forever. They can be in the house until they grow out of it, right? And nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. In order for something to change, you have to realize that it's not the way it's supposed to be. When you realize, when you have a sense that it's not the way it's supposed to be, it's going to bother you. It's going to itch, and at a certain point, you're going to correct it. Not just you're going to correct it, but it's going to have to be restored to its correct phase. There's a notion that we have, and the Maharal has taught us this from the very, very beginning of the Netzach Yisrael, is that Golus is supposed to be an unnatural state. You understand, it's Yetziyah Min HaSeder. The Jewish people are split apart, that's unnatural, we're supposed to be together. The Jewish people are out of their land, out of their place, out of their environment. That's a Yetziyah Min HaSeder. The Jewish people are subordinate to another nation instead of being independent. That's Yetziyah Min HaSeder. So Hashem made a world that it should be B'Seder. So yeah, there are temporary hiccups which happen along the way that make things not follow in that route. But ultimately, everything is supposed to be in its place. And when you understand that everything is supposed to be in its place, and you come in and something's messy, so you might need to leave it messy for a little bit. Maybe you don't have time right now, maybe you don't have strength right now to put it right. But you know, slowly but surely, you're walking past something, you'll put it back into its place. Somebody comes in, you'll tell them, could you move that over there? You hire somebody, they'll come, they'll make it right. Because you can't live in a situation where it's just not the way it's supposed to be. It's not a long-term solution. And it's the same thing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with his activity towards the world. Says the Maharal, that's why Avelus over Yerushalayim is essential. Because you don't want to be vis-a-vis Yerushalayim like the teenager who got used to his messy room, right? Who doesn't even realize that it's weird, that it's strange, that these things don't belong this way. Once you get used to it, so then it becomes the adopted Seder, the adopted order. And you don't anymore have that engine to make it right, to correct it. That's the idea, says the Maharal, and this is the fundamental idea that he has here in this perek. And we've come across it before, but the purpose of this perek is compelling Avelus on Yerushalayim, compelling grieving over Yerushalayim. And he says the reason why that's so important, and the reason why Chazal assert that the one who will rejoice over the Binyan Yerushalayim is the one who grieves over it. Meanwhile, Sisu Ita Mosa is Kol HaMisav L'Malea. You will rejoice with it in celebration. Those who mourn over it now in the interim is because when you realize that it's not right, that's the biggest reason for it to become right. The biggest reason to make it right.
Who makes it right?
Again, whether you or HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be Machzir Sa'ilam L'Sidra. Hashem wants things to be back the way they're supposed to be. But the engine to that is the person's the discomfort with it. When you're uncomfortable with it, you're moving towards the proper reality. That's what will do it.
I don't want to interrupt, but we have a sense today, and maybe you can comment on it as part of this. That you know, we're in Golis, but I wait for the Mashiach. Meanwhile, I'll sit here in Baltimore, you know, and under my palm tree, whatever we have here, it's okay. Yeah, it's Golis, but it's like lip service. I mean, you have a sensitivity towards this. How do we
you know, there are two issues which are wrapped up in that situation. One issue which is wrapped up in that situation would be, is the person fundamentally really comfortable? You know, there's such a thing as a person saying, oh yeah, Mashiach, 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 but you know, meanwhile, it ain't too bad. The situation isn't so bad. What the Maharal is speaking about is that, where the person is comfortable with the situation fundamentally. You know, they know, they heard something about Gula, they daven v'Yerushalayim Ircha b'Rachmim Toshuv, but the bottom line is, it doesn't bother the person fundamentally. It's not really an issue that the person's grappling with, I'm missing something, I'm missing something, I'm missing something. On the other hand, the second part of it would be that a person could taka feel that they're missing something, realize that they're missing something, but say, it's not for me to necessarily try to change matters, take matters into my own hands to change them in the physical and the material sense. Right? The philosophy of Rav Yehuda in the Gemara, where he says, Oser lalois mi bavel eretz Yisrael. It's forbidden for a person to go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael because it says, Bavela yuvo v'shama yu ad yom pakti yisam. They should be brought to Bavel and there they must remain until the day that I remember them, until the day that I call them out. Rav Yehuda ached less over the thing. Farkert, there's a beautiful thing that you find that Rabbi Yehuda was the one who was more focused on the lack of Eretz Yisrael. You find in the Gemara, I'm sorry, it's escaping me right this moment, exactly the illustration, but Rabbi Meir Simcha points out in the Meshech Chochma that you find that Rabbi Yehuda grieved over Eretz Yisrael more than anybody else because he felt he couldn't correct it, he couldn't fix it. Rabbi Zeira was able to go up to Eretz Yisrael, so fine, I'll be able to have it. But the one who can't have it sometimes grieves even more. I don't believe that the Mizrahi would have been Misabel more on Tisha B'Av than the Satmar Rav. I would imagine it would be the opposite, right? The Mizrahi would say, we can have it. Imagine that we do have it, right? And therefore, you know, maybe, you know, they have a sense of Pas Pasale. The Satmar Rav was, he can't do it. Well, it was because he didn't like Eretz Yisrael. He loved Eretz Yisrael with every grain of his existence. And he said, therefore, that you have to have it, mamish, biktusha v'tar, exactly right. So he, to him, Tisha B'Av, was a gaping wound. So there's a tactical question where a person might say, okay, look, I can't have it. Now, sometimes that's demonstrative of a lack of interest. A lack of interest. If you really meant it, you'd pick up and you would go. And there's a long record of such discussions which we find in Chazal. Right, the famous discussion of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari with the king, where he gives him all these beautiful speeches about Eretz Yisrael and the significance of Eretz Yisrael and the importance of Eretz Yisrael. And after he finishes, the king says to him, so I have a little question. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? And he says, you're right. If I really meant it, I would do something about it. And if we really all meant it and we weren't saying these words of Esechazena Einenu B'Shuv Chotzihem B'Rachamim like a parrot, right, chirps, he says, then, number one, we would do something about it. Number two, HaKadosh Baruch would have done something about it. Hashem would have made the difference already. Hashem wouldn't allow us to stay in a golus if the golus indeed bothered us so much, which is very much echoing this very same principle. So sometimes the person who says, you know, but meanwhile we have to stay here, is not so bothered by the issue. And you know, there's a psychological mechanism which has taken hold in the Jewish people. And that is that those who feel sometimes that you shouldn't do much about it, or you can't do much about it, or you can't go for some reason, they stop talking about the importance of it. They stop talking about the centrality and the significance of Eretz Yisrael, because, tell me something, you know, if you can't have something, right, so you're going to talk about it all the time? Right, you know, you have a face, you know, you always wanted to go to Florida, right? You talk about the palm trees. Nobody's sitting under a palm tree in Baltimore, right? But you, but the person always, you know, goes to Florida. They can't go, whatever it is. You know, a fellow used to go to his vacation to Florida. He used to go for 2 months in the winter, all the time, right? And now, for whatever reason, can't travel. Can't travel to Florida. So you know what's going to happen? So people are going to sit. They're going to talk to him about Florida. Oh, remember when you used to go to Florida? Every time you mention Florida, right, he gets an ache in his chest from thinking about Florida. So you avoid the subject of Florida completely. You take the photo albums from the old days in Florida, you put them away. He doesn't want to be reminded about it because he can't have it anyway. So he forgets, slowly but surely, that there's such a thing called Florida. Right? So we should do the same thing in the Golus. That would be the philosophy. You can't go anywhere. So forget about Eretz Yisrael. It's a terrible mistake. This is what he's saying. A person has to be Misabel al Yerushalayim. When you feel that it's missing, so then you're constantly moving to correct it. There's a famous thing that I say over very frequently, especially this upcoming time of year, it's from the Chidushei Harim and the Rabbi Menachem Zemba, Hashem Yikayim Dama, used to say it over frequently in the Warsaw Ghetto. This is what's said. Rabbi Menachem Zemba used to say it over. It says, Vayitzias Mitzrayim, Vayitzesi Eschem Mitachas Sivlois Mitzrayim. Hashem says, I will remove you from beneath the burdens of Mitzrayim. That's the simple translation of the Pasuk. Sivlois are the burdens. However, you know, there's a term also, to be sovel, savlanut, is tolerance. And he said, the Chidush Harim said, that the idea was, that what happened was, Klal Yisrael became tolerant of their situation. There's such a thing as a person who just gets used to it. You know, they don't taste the taste of freedom. Right? So this is the grind. This is normal. This is normal. So they accept it as being normal. Then you're really in trouble. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maftiach them, and he said, I'm going to take you out from the higher tolerance that you have developed in Mitzrayim. I'm going to make you realize this ain't normal, that this isn't the way things are supposed to be. That's the first step to the Geula. And Rabbi Nachum Zemba used to say this over in the Warsaw Ghetto, because the psychological warfare, which was very effectively waged by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, was to remove any sense of freedom, of independence, any striving for anything higher or greater from the B'nai Yisrael. That they should be comfortable, right? They shouldn't expect anything more. And drive that out of them, drive the spirit out of them. So he said, you can't do that. Never be comfortable with this. Never be reconciled with this. It's a somewhat of a disputed historical fact. Depends who you listen to, who you believe. But he was, according to many reliable sources, a big supporter of the resistance and the uprising, right? Even, he held that it was, according to many accounts, he held that was a Kiddush Hashem. Because that was Mitachas Sivlois Mitzrayim. That was, recognizing this isn't the way it's supposed to be. When you change the mindset that that's the way it's supposed to be, that spells disaster. So that's what he writes here. That Sisu Ita Masa is Kola Misad L'Malel. You have to want for it to change in order to be able to bring on the change. And if I could shoot ahead to the very end of the Perek, if you're using the Hartman edition, it's page Tav Kuf Aleph. In the other edition, it's page, in the classic edition, it's page Kuf Chaf on the bottom of the first column. Lokach alo adam lisadu al churban beis hamikdash v'yemisayinu mekainen al churbanai. Therefore, a person should grieve over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and he should mourn and lament over its destruction. And he should daven that Hashem should build the Beis HaMikdash again. When he doesn't do it, he becomes like a cause for the Beis HaMikdash's destruction. If a person is reconciling himself with the matzav the way it is, then he is perpetuating the matzav. And he brings an astounding Yerushalmi, which he translates in his own way. As Rabbi Hartman brings in the footnotes, the classic Meforshim of the Yerushalmi did not understand the Yerushalmi the way the Maral understands it. Yerushalmi says as follows in the beginning of Maseches Yuma, HaRishonim he'eviru es hatikra, V'achreinim piyapu oisai. V'kol kach loma shelo yosu tshuva. The first ones removed the roof of the Mikdash. The latter ones completely destroyed it. Why? Because they didn't do tshuva. Now, the Korban Ha'eda, the classic Mefarshim of the Yerushalmi, understand that Nebuchadnezzar, when he destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, he caved in the roof. There was still an outer structure. It wasn't raised. Whereas by the Romans, Sion Sada Techoresh, right? By the Romans, the building was completely raised and destroyed. Why? Because Le'asu Tshuva. Because they, perpetuated that which was there before. However, the Maral understands it not as referring to the first Beis HaMikdash versus the second Beis HaMikdash. What he understands it as referring to is the ones who were there originally at the beginning when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Rishonim, and the Achronim, the later generations. When the Beis HaMikdash was originally destroyed, it was destroyed. It was destroyed because of their chatoim, because of our chatoim, Mnei chatoim, and therefore there was a great destruction which was brought upon the Beis HaMikdash. Do you think they walked past the Beis HaMikdash and they saw it in ruins, and they just whistled Dixie, just kept going? They realized exactly what had happened. There was a big loss. And therefore, it was a loss of the Mikdash. A terrible tragedy had happened, but they felt the loss. We, however, the Achronim, who got used to it, and said, okay, so we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. You expect the Jewish people to have a Beis HaMikdash? When was the last time we had a Beis HaMikdash? We have a nice shul, we're happy, right? A nice community, we're happy. So the Achronim, who reconciled with the lack of a Beis HaMikdash, it's as if Piapuaisa, it's as if they didn't leave a building in ruins. They uprooted it. They smoothed it. Right now they're planting grass right on the lot over there. It's fine. It's okay. It's gone, and we're reconciled with it, and we can take it, we can handle it. That's the idea. The Yerushalmi, we're familiar with the statement of Chazal that kol mi shelo Beis HaMikdash b'yamav, anybody who that the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built in its day, it's as if it was destroyed in his day. So you can understand that according to the first explanation of the Maharal. You got to want it, you got to need it, so you'll bring it back. But what the Yerushalmi is describing here is a greater reality and a deeper reality, which is that where we get used to it, more and more used to it, it's uprooting the whole thing. Again, it's not going to be part of the Seder. It's not going to be part of the order of things anymore. I mentioned to you before that we talked about this earlier, and I think it was in one of the very memorable portions of the Netzach Yisrael. If you recall, he spoke about the Tisha B'Av, of the idea of Atem b'chisem b'chia shalchinam ani ekba lochem b'chia l'dayres. You cried on Tisha B'Av for no reason, b'chera meraglim, and I'm going to make it a cry for the generations. And the Maharal explained that the Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, they cried, ay vey, what are we, right, they suffered, right? There wasn't really a civilized Mitzrayim. The Pasuk describes how the Bnei Yisrael, vayonchu Bnei Yisrael min avayda vayizoku, they were groaning and they were crying. Right, to be enslaved, it bothered them very, very much. They cried, they wanted to get out of there. And they got out of there, and they got taken to the Midbar. So they were no longer enslaved, no longer suffering. And then Hashem wanted to just finish the job right away, take them into Eretz Yisrael. And what happened? They cried that they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. They cried they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the Maharal explains, what if a person cries when they're in their unnatural matzav? Right? When a person's enslaved, they're crying. So like we said in the beginning today, Hashem doesn't leave things upside down, doesn't leave things crazy. You can't spend your whole time crying, right? You're going to have to fix it. Or you're going to have to reconcile with it. You have to figure out some way, right? In order to be able to make it right. When Hashem didn't allow Yaakov to be relieved from the grieving over Yosef, while most people can be relieved over grief, why? Remember? Because the Gzeira was only on a mess, on a dead person, that it should be forgotten from the heart, but not on a live person. What's the idea? Because look, things change. People lose Lailin Rahman Islam relatives in their lives, and they have to be able to adjust. That's a reality which isn't changing, you know, until the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. So Hashem has to give the person the ability to, so to speak, move beyond it in an appropriate way. Not forget about it, but move beyond it in an appropriate way. But Yaakov was supposed to recalibrate his life, adjust his life to life without Yosef? Why should he? Yosef was still alive, and they were going to be reunited. So for Yaakov to stop crying would mean that Yaakov would create that kind of a distance that should exist with a person who's dead. He can't create that distance. We need the closeness to still be there. He's still alive. Not supposed to stop crying. It's coming back. He's coming back. So the Bnei Yisrael, right? Well, when you're crying, you're gonna have to fix it or whatever or something. It's gonna or reconcile to it. The Bnei Yisrael cried over their slavery. So Hashem fixed it. The Bnei Yisrael didn't cry over not being in Eretz Yisrael. The opposite. They cried over going to Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem said, "It ain't so natural." So Yitzias Mitzrayim will remain forever. But coming into Eretz Yisrael, Amol, sometimes yes, sometimes no. We haven't made it our essence, that we cry over its absence. So therefore, it's not simple that it's there. My Rebbe Zuchel Bachar, Rabbi Weinberg, always used to say this in the Rambam. The Rambam, we know it from the language of the Animamin, which wasn't really his language. Right, ani mamin be'emunah shleima b'vias haMashiach. Ve'af al pi sheyismameya im kol zeh achak alei b'chayim sheyach. Even though he delays, I wait for him every day that he should come. Right, the Rambam writes in the Yad. He says, "V'chol mi she'enai mamin boy, ve'enai mitzaper li'raisei." A person doesn't believe in it and doesn't look forward to be able to see it. So that's a you know, ein lechelik olam abba. That's we have to be mamin b'vias haMashiach. So what does it mean that he's waiting for it to come? That he's waiting for it to come. So, you know, some would say that the Rambam was coming to exclude the opinion of the Christians, right, who say he came already, right? Some would say that when we say you have to wait for it to come every day, is that you have to have a belief that he's coming right now. Right? Mitzvah means you have to have a belief that he's coming right now. I believe Mashiach is coming today. I believe Mashiach is coming tomorrow. You know, which is a school of thought. Rabbi Weinberg didn't feel that way, because then you're a fool yesterday for your belief today for your belief of yesterday. He said mitzape li roisei means that you're yearning for it. Mitzapim li Yeshua. You never say, you know what, okay, look, this is the way it is, and you stop waiting for it. You have to constantly be waiting for it. You have to realize that the world the way it is right now, without Mashiach, without Gilui Shechina, is upside down. I mean, it's crazy. A world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu without Hashem being recognized, it's just craziness. It's insanity. How can you live in a world like this? That's Tzipisa LiYeshua. That's what it means to yearn for Geula. To realize that you're missing something big time. That's the chiyuv of being Mitzapa LiYeshua. Right? And that's what we say. Ki Lishuascha, Tzemach David Abduch HaMeres HaTzmiach, bring back the shoot of David. Right? Why? Because we're yearning for it every day. When we feel that it's missing, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to fill the void. That's the essential teaching of the Maral. And it's a magnificent teaching, it's profound, but more than anything else, it's a starke Musar Shmus. It's a strong thought that we have to just be very, very uncomfortable. We have to be uncomfortable with the situation. We can't be reconciled. We can't have a false sense of happiness, of security. And it's a very significant thing. Hopefully make it one of the emphases. Mirat Hashem is Tisha B'Av and our discussions over Tisha B'Av. Baruch HaTor, Adonino, Yoleinu, Melech, Elam, Shekhom, Yom, Yom, Yom.
Lamaisa, what can you do to do that?
What can you do to do that? So, I think that there are two directions that a person can take in approaching this sugya. One of them has to do with the positive, and the other one has to do with the negative. Like most things, you can be motivated, so to speak, positively, you can be motivated negatively. The positive is that a person would need to focus on the positive role and meaning of Eretz Yisrael, of Yerushalayim, of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, the Ramban, when he was older, but still had a house with children, Ramban picked up and left Eretz Yisrael. He left behind his wife, he left behind his children. And he wrote poetry about the pain which that caused him. It wasn't like, you know, some fellow anxious to go on a business trip because he had too many bath times in the past month, right, that he had to do. It hurt him very, very much. But the Ramban, at a certain point, felt that he had to go to Eretz Yisrael. And it wasn't, right, he didn't go business class, he didn't complain about the leg room, right, on El Al in economy, right? It was a dangerous time, and so on and so forth. It was a very, very difficult situation for what he describes, even what he came to, right? Barely having a minion in Yerushalayim, you know, a painter who had a minion. He describes, you know, the Ramban shul the way we have it now. There's a base medrash in Yerushalayim with two pillars, right, in it, and you know, but it was a very, very difficult, very, very difficult. Why did he do it? So I have a very simple theory.
He was running for his life,
wasn't he? Nah, he wasn't running for his life. I don't think so. I don't think Ramban was escaping anything. If that's true, I'm missing some very, very important information. It wasn't the pleasant times in Europe, and Ramban was involved in many of the debates, but I don't think he ran to Eretz Yisrael to run away. It's certainly not the way he presents it in his letters. Ramban had to, because he wrote a Pirush al HaTorah. And in the Perush al HaTorah, starting with the first pasuk in the Torah, you speak about Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban famously expounded tremendously in many, many places, in Sefer Bereishis, in Sefer Shmos, in Sefer Vayikra, in Sefer Bamidbar, in Sefer Devarim, you get the idea, right? But, you know, there are very significant sections, especially in Bereishis and in Vayikra, where the Ramban speaks about the whole Torah being for Eretz Yisrael, the main place to do the Mitzvah Yisrael, and the Chutz La'aretz, even though you have mitzvahs, it's just to keep you warmed up, right? So you'll be ready to, so you won't be completely unfamiliar to you when you come to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the only place of direct Hashkocha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, if you write about this all the time, and then he continued past his Perush HaTorah, and he said this in his drushas and everything else. At a certain point, you talk about it so much, I mean, my gosh, as a great rabbi once said, you know, you keep talking about this stuff for 40 years, eventually you start believing it. And at a certain point, he just couldn't not go. He couldn't not go. It broke. You know, the dam broke. And he had to go. So there's such a thing as a person emphasizing the positive qualities constantly of Eretz Yisrael by learning. By learning those Rambans, by learning the Kuzaris, by being misaper b'shvacha shel Eretz Yisrael, right? The Kuzari says in the very end, the last words of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari are, after he says to the fellow, "Now I am going to Eretz Yisrael," and now the king, instead of telling him why aren't you going, he starts asking why he is going, and he explains why he's going despite the dangers and despite the fact that you can still be a Jew in Chutz La'aretz and so on and so forth, and he says, "I'm going. And if you don't go, your job is to insert into people, into their hearts, the love of Eretz Yisrael. If you're in Chutz La'aretz, you gotta love it. You gotta want it. You gotta want it very, very, very badly. And right, Echad Hanoilad Ba, right? Tzion Yomar Ish Vishu Lad Ba. Tzion, it will be said, a man who was born there. So the Gemara said, Echad Hanoilad Ba veEchad Hametzapa LeRaisa. Whether he's actually born there or he's not, but he yearns to see it. So there's positive ways to increasingly yearning. And the negative way is as follows. Why do we want Mashiach? What drives us to want Mashiach? So the Rambam says something. We're not going to speak about what the Rambam says. I don't think the Rambam's approach to this is the conventional approach we find reflected in Chacham. The thing which drives us more than anything else towards Mashiach is Chilul Hashem. A world created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where Hashem isn't recognized, where Hashem doesn't have a place in this world where He is welcome, is a terrible, terrible thing. And it should be a source of abiding pain. Every time we finish davening, we say, Al kein kavelucha Hashem, al kein liroiz meir v'siferes v'zecha. We yearn Hashem for the day when we will soon see, quickly see, the glory of your strength, where the nations will throw away their idols, and everybody will turn and call to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a person has to focus on Chilul Hashem. Has to, as we walk around and we see things, and we walk around and we hear things, and we see what's called Jewish, which isn't at all connected to Torah and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we see a world of values that are completely absent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a person has to, again, not be tolerant of that, has to realize in every sense of those things that it's a Chilul Hashem. A person would hear certain things that we hear all the time. In the good old days, a person would tear Kriya. Would tear Kriya because they just heard blasphemy. If we did that, we wouldn't have a wardrobe left. Right? So, you know, we just get used to it. Chilul Hashem. So there's the positive that we're missing, and there's the negative that we're experiencing. And that's what a person has to do, I think, in whatever way they can. Okay. So now, let's just quickly try to touch upon a couple of the Makairis that the Maral discusses over here. One of them is a little bit of a tangent, but it's a chosh of a taich. It's a nice interpretation of the Gemara that I think is I think we'll all get something here from. The Mishnah says in the beginning of the fifth parak of Brachas, "Ein emdim lehispalo olamitech kaved reish." A person should only arise to daven with kaved reish, from a perspective of seriousness. Says the Gemara, how do we know? Says the Gemara, because it says, Eshtacha ve'leichal kotshecha b'yirasecha. Right? The Gemara brings another source. I will bow down before your heichal b'yirasecha with your fear. So the Gemara says, does that really what it means? It's whatever. The Gemara brings another pasuk. Maybe that's the only time we have David HaMelech. El Amr Avnachma Yitzchak Mehacha. Ivdu es Hashem beYira veGilu beRa'ada. Serve Hashem with fear, veGilu, and rejoice with Ra'ada, with trembling. And he said, B'Malkam Gilu Hashem Te Ra'ada. Where there would be rejoicing, there should be trembling. Abai Avi Yosef Kamei the Rab. Abai was sitting in front of Rabba. Chazi Daviko Barach Tuva. He saw him laughing. Omar, he said, "V'gilu b'radoksiv." It says, when you rejoice, it should be with trembling. You have to have temper your laughter, your joy, with trepidation. Omar lay, so he responded to him, and he said, "Ana tefillin manachna." I'm wearing tefillin. Says Rashi, what's the answer? You're complaining that I'm laughing too much, and it seems like I'm a pyrek oil, like I'm not thinking about my burdens, my responsibilities. I'm wearing my tefillin. V'heim edus shemam shelas kaini u'meshar soy olai. I'm wearing my tefillin, and that is a reminder, certainly, that I am subject to the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore that is offsetting my laughing. Even though I'm laughing, right? But nevertheless, I have a reminder. Don't worry. It's not that I'm not mindful of my responsibilities. So the Gemara has this give and take. That's the way Rashi interprets it. The Maral has a very different interpretation of the Gemara, which again is not directly connected with what we're speaking about here. He really just brings this Gemara and he goes through it to get to what the Gemara talks about in the end. But he has a beautiful alternative touch to the Gemara. Rashi says, oh, I agree that I have to be heavy-headed. However, I'm wearing tefillin and that's providing me with my heavy head. He says, no. He says, you know why I'm laughing? I'm laughing because I'm wearing tefillin. And he says the debate between these two chachamim was a debate over two perspectives a person can have when they're davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One perspective a person can have when they're davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a perspective of Kaved Rosh. And the truth is it's a machlokes. The Gemara brings that there's another braisa which says, Ein Adam Eimed L'Spala El Mitoich Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Right, there is a notion of only getting up to daven from simcha. It's two different perspectives. In the halacha, the Gemara conclusion seems to be that it depends. There are times when there are times of difficulty where a person's supposed to clasp their hands like a nebuch and daven, and there are times when a person's supposed to daven with shtoltz, you know, with poise and with position. Times of chedva, times of joy. So the Gemara has these two, and the Maral says this is the debate. Because when a person turns to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does that mean? It means, look, I'm dependent, right? I have nothing if I don't turn to Hashem. I'm ka'avda kamamore, like a servant standing in front of his master. And that's one perspective. And that perspective is not a perspective by a servant who comes in front of his master pleading for whatever it is, his basic needs. He's not there giggling. He's not laughing. Right, he's not doing a tremendous simcha. He does it with humility and with an expression of need. On the other hand, there's another perspective. And the other perspective is that we have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, there's a need which is part of that connection. But we have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what is the most eloquent expression of the connection and relationship we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is the tefillin, right? The tefillin, which is v'ro kol ame oretz kishem Hashem nikra olecha. People see us wearing the tefillin, the nations of the world, they say, wow, the name of Hashem is upon you. Right? Hashem's tefillin, our tefillin, our tefillin dedicate our unique relationship with Hashem. Hashem's tefillin demonstrate His unique relationship with us. So he says, look, you're telling me I'm supposed to be so somber because I'm in front of Hashem and asking for things? I'm laughing because I'm wearing tefillin. And I realize that tefillah is implying as well a connection, a relationship that you have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you understand that that's how it expresses itself later in the halacha. It's in the Gemara. It's the halacha based on the Gemara. That when you're in a time when you don't feel the relationship so strongly, when it's very, very difficult times, then you're standing there as the person with need. And the posture, the dominant feeling, the dominant posture of the tefillah is need, heavy head, so to speak, humility. But there are other times when you feel the wealth, when you feel the connection, and there the dominant feeling which a person would have in tefillah is, wow, simcha, I have a connection, I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so you really need to have them both. You really need to have a healthy dose of both. But this was the debate, the way it existed between them. Isn't that Gevaldik? Isn't that a very, very important perspective? Dual perspective on tefillah. In a sense. But a person should be should mix their pitches. You know, sometimes you have to be a chassid, and sometimes you have to be a misnagid. And I don't mean on Shmini Atzeres. Okay, so the...
even or dine alone.
The Gemara goes on to talk about concerns about a person being a little bit too light-headed. And the Gemara says as follows. Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Yosef kamed Rabbi Zeira chazi davi kol bad achtuva. Rabbi Yirmiyahu was sitting in front of Rabbi Zeira, and he saw that he was in a very good mood. Omar Lehi, he said to him, b'chol etzev yehei maisa, yehei maisa. The Pasuk says, in any sadness or anxiousness that you feel, the more the better. Omar Lehi, so he said to him again, I'm not tefillin menach, I'm wearing my tefillin. So it's the same response, it's a different approach. The first one said v'gilu birada. The second one said v'chol etzev yehei maisa. So the moral darshans on the fact that whereas the first one was a Talmud, so he said, you know, you just, you know, even if you're laughing, but, you know, v'gilu birada, there should be some level of trembling. Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Zeira was dealing with Rav Yirmiyah, and he was a leader, he was a Rebbe. And he says, so he treats him like a Rebbe. He says, by you, you have to have an extra level of somberness and sobriety because of your significant position. And the world goes on to tell a story about people who were too jovial at a wedding, and he went and he broke something so that they would cool down a little bit. And the Gemara says, Osir lo adam shimale schaik piv ba'ilam hazeh. Shenemar ozi mole schaik pinu ulashaynenu rina. Person is not allowed to fill their mouth with laughter. Laugh fully, fully in this world. As we say every Shabbos when we bench, then our mouths will be filled with laughter. Ozi mole schaik pinu, but not now. When he emru ba'goyim higdil Hashem lasay simele. As soon as Rish Lakish heard this from Rav Yechlan, he never laughed a full-mouthed laugh again after this point in time. Okay, so a person's supposed to limit, in that sense, the laughter. And the Maharal explains as follows. He says, what's the idea of filling your mouth with laughter? And he says... And we're going to, Mir Tashem, connect it to what we learned about last time in Perek Chav Beis. He says that Milui Schaik Piv is where the laughter is out. It's bepoyel. It's active. A person can feel simcha in their heart. It doesn't say then we will feel joy in our heart. A person can feel simcha in their heart. But they can't feel simcha bepoyel out in the open. In other words, there is a world of emunah, of faith in which we live, where we know where we have connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter what. Right? Even in the most difficult of times. But to laugh out loud, means that it's revealed, and it's obvious. And that's not true in this world. Simcha b'payel can only be when there's active simcha out there. And this really very much reflects what we learned about last time in Perek Chav Beis. Remember that you're supposed to say Baruch Shem Kevod Malchusai quietly, as opposed to Yehi Shmei Rabba, which seems to be the same thing, which you're supposed to say out loud with all of your strength. And we explained that the idea is because Yehi Shmei Rabba is a wish. Baruch Shem is a statement of fact. Yehi Shmei Rabba is May Hashem's name become blessed. Baruch Shem is a commentary. Blessed is the name of Hashem. And the name of Hashem is not clearly blessed. It's not open. In our world, the way it is, it's not open. We yearn and we work towards the day where it will be, but it's not. And for a person to make that declaration when it's not manifestly clear is wrong. It's incongruous. So therefore, it's the same thing. A person might have an emunah in their heart, but they can't laugh out loud in this world. Rabbi Akiva did, as you know, repeatedly. And people always asked him questions about it. They didn't understand. But that was the avoid of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the one who was somehow supposed to bring out the world of emunah to the people. So he laughed out loud, even in the time of Tsar. He was like the pendulum swing in the other direction. But conventionally, we don't say everybody should go around laughing at their tzaris. Right? We don't say that. We don't say a person should go to the Mokham HaMikdash and should laugh because they say, oh good, wonderful, there's a Churban, that means it's going to be a Gula, because that's what the Navi said. No, a person who goes to the Mokham HaMikdash is supposed to cry. Supposed to tear Kriya. Right? Because, as it is, the Simcha, the joy, the fullness, we can only express when it's out there, B'Payel. Meanwhile, we're not in a full world. Laughter implies, Simcha implies a certain fullness, and we are simply not there. Another Gemara that the Maral discusses over here is the Gemara about the Misabel over the Churban. And it's the Gemara in the end of the third parak of Baba Basra, the end of Cheskas Habatim. The Gemara says that when there was the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Rabu Perushin B'Yisrael, there were a lot of people who were ready to act as Perushin. And what did they want to do? They didn't want to eat meat or drink wine anymore. Why? So Rabbi Yeshua asked them why, and they said, how can we eat meat when meat would be going on to the Mizbeach? How can we drink wine when wine would be poured on the Mizbeach? In other words, they said that if the portion is not going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they didn't want to have their portion either. Maral explains it just with a little bit more of a knach, a little bit more of a depth, that they said that everything which is created l'chvayd Hashem. Chol ha-nivra b'shmi l'chvaydi b'rasiv. Everything Hashem created for His honor. And if Hashem's not getting His portion, then why does it even exist? Why should we even use it? They didn't want to touch the meat or the wine. This is the reason why we don't eat meat or drink wine in the 9 days. It's for this reason. Right, we fulfill it at that time. But Rabbi Yeshua said to them, tell me something. Maybe you shouldn't eat bread because there are no menachos anymore. Maybe you shouldn't have fruit because there's no bikurim anymore. Maybe you shouldn't drink water because there's no more nisach hamayim, pouring of water on the Mizbeach on Sukkos. So he says you have to realize there's what you can do and there's what you can't do. And this is Xavier Shein Reva Tzibur Yechelum Lamidva. To accept this practice, it's beyond what the Tzibur can take. And therefore, instead of being so drastic, instead they made a different kind of a takana. And what was it? Some of it is reflected in the Gemara and Saita, those of you who finished Saita yesterday with the Daf HaYomi. So it speaks about certain things which they removed from celebrations, the greatest adornments. And this is what the Gemara speaks about here. Sod Adam as Beisai Besid, a person paints his house, Umeshayer Bay Dover Muat, and he leaves a part which he leaves unpainted. The Kamam Rav Yosef Amma Al Amma, one Amma by one Amma, and Rav Chisda says, opposite the door. Ois Adam called Tzarchei Sud, a person makes all that is needed for the meal, Umeshayer Dover Muat, but he leaves out one thing. What's that? Kosa Daharsana. In other words, we don't make things perfect. The Prushim wanted to say that everything was lost. We say for a person to walk around forever in the Golos that everything is lost, they won't be able to handle it. But we say we don't have everything. So, Im le'ala es Yerushalayim al rei simchasi, we rejoice, we have a simcha, we have a chasana. We have to mention Yerushalayim, we have to break a glass. It's not perfect. The joy is not complete. There has to be a hollow space which is left in the person's heart where they're not memale schaik piv ba'ilamaz, that they don't fill their mouth with laughter in this world. That they recognize that things are not quite perfect. And sometimes when it's not perfect, it's like, You know, it's not done. Yeah.
Like
so this is a very, very interesting and delicate and serious halachic issue. There's a siman in Shulchan Aruch Tav Kuf Samach, I think, about Zecher L'Churban, and it lists all these different things. And we all have all. Then there's all kinds of rationale in the placement. Why this one doesn't get done? Why that one doesn't get done? Oh, leaving Sid is only if you build a house from scratch. But it doesn't apply if you didn't build a house from scratch. And, you know, leaving unpainted and so on and so forth. All kinds of different ways out. I feel very much that that's all very nice. But we're left without Zecher L'Churban. So, yeah, you don't make a new halachas, but there would be something. You know, a person's gonna make something. They're gonna make a meal, a feast, a sheva bracha, a simcha, something like that. And they want it to be. They got everything lined up. They have the doilies matching the upholstery, and you know, and the icing on the cupcakes. You know, mindfully, something which you would like to have there, don't have there. Leave something out. And find a way. I mean, huh?
Mentioning it is not enough.
It wasn't enough in the Gemara. It's not. I'm not saying lahalacha that a person's, so on. But you know, there's a din. The Gemara says, "Tziyani dairishayin lamichal d'boi drisha." You want it to be on your mind. You want to realize that something's missing. So, let's realize that something's missing. You know, do it in a tangible way. We were lucky in our house. I think we had to do some work, and we ended up reconfiguring the area right opposite the front door. A closet came out, a closet went up. So we actually built a wall there. When you build your own wall, so then most days holy, you have to leave an Amma Alamma even in Chutz L'Aretz. So we have an Amma, more or less an Amma Alamma that's open there, right in front of the front door. I'm very happy with it. I'm afraid. So some people have the Amma Alamma and they make a work of art out of it. They make on gold letters, Zecher L'Churban, and so on and so forth. Ends up being prettier than if they would have just painted it the same color as the rest of the room. So we haven't put anything there. Sometimes I think somebody thinks we're still in the middle. Right? So maybe we'll put on it in pencil, Zecher L'Churban, or something like that, so that it's, you know, that we remember, that the kids remember, that we remember that it's noticed. But it's a good thing to have it. I don't, you know, the Malchus is not complete. You know, the Sefer Hasidim, you know, wrote about the tragedy of people building houses made out of brick in Chutz L'Aretz. Looks like they want to stay. Right? Looks like they're there for the long term. And I think we would all benefit from being more mindful. You have a million kulas. You know, one of the other sugyas which he discusses here, which he learned in the end of Saita, is music. Music bizman hazeh mishabotla sanhedrin botla ashir mi beis hamishtois. All kinds of kulas and leniencies which we have, and the most famous one is the one which the Maral brings from the Gaonim, which is that if it's music to praise Hashem, so then it's okay. Right? And the Maral says, well, I don't know. You know, it's mutter, but you know, we're left without proactive avelus on the churban. Well, that's the bottom line result.
Doesn't a person recognize, you know, their own limitations in terms of what they're going to be able to handle?
Correct. And that's the idea which happens over there in the Gemara. They want to get rid of the meat and the wine. He said, you can't have that as a standard kaiso. There's only so much you can do. I'm not suggesting that people not listen to music. I'm not suggesting that. But there is a notion of tempering it.
Okay.
You know, Rav Moshe said, although Maral disagrees with it in terms of, because others said it earlier in Rishayim, it says Bashir lo yishtu yayin. The Gemara in Saita brings the pasuk that with music they shouldn't drink wine. So he says, so there are those who say that the only issue to listen to music is while you're eating and drinking. Right, but otherwise not, because it says with music they shouldn't drink wine. Mm-hmm. But the Maral says it's clear from the Gemara not like that. This is a shaiva. He says it's clear from the Gemara not like that, because the Gemara says music which is used. I mean, when we learned the Gemara in the Daf Yomi, I said it as like aerobics, you know. It's a common, frequently asked question during the 3 weeks. People do exercise, they do it to music. So the Gemara says that people who are working to the rhythm of a music is permitted, because there the music isn't for joy, the music is to just, you know, to provide the rhythm. It's a sophisticated metronome, you know, that just keeps things going according to a pace, keeps things going, and that's okay. Says, well, they're not eating and drinking. And still the Gemara has to come up with a heter that it was this. It says, Gardiim, weavers who have music playing, that's just for fun, says the Gemara. That's not for pace. That's just for fun. They're not drinking and eating, they're working. So you see that that it's not understood to be limited to, you know, to Shtiyas Yayin. Farkir, says the Maral. A person might have thought when you're drinking wine, so that's the time to be joyous, maybe you would be able to play music. No. Even then, Bishula Yishtu Yayin. Ramesha wrote about it, you know, and he was very conservative about listening to music. But so many are makbid, we don't play music when we eat. In our house, we don't play music when we're eating a meal. You know, something, huh?
Even tape.
Yeah.
Weddings they do though.
Wedding you can. Wedding there's well because it's a sudas mitzvah you can, right? But generally, as a matter of, because there it's, you know, that's part of the positive expression of the simcha. But in a neutral situation.
What about a shul banquet, for example? Like that's
a sudas mitzvah. A sudas mitzvah. It's certainly a sudas mitzvah. It's more justified. And there's a positive value. We believe in playing music in the house. It's very, very important for to people have a sense of spirit. I'm not advocating it l'maisa, but that doesn't obviate the need for expressions of zecher l'churban. It just doesn't obviate the need for that. That still has to be there. And we're a little bit too complacent. Okay.
Rock and roll, which isn't